Okay. He assures me you'll get one back. Okay. Thank you, Kay, for your willingness to share your personal experience with us. The second person is me. I am going to talk about my family experience as well. And actually, I want to tell you that I have been involved in a lot of preparation for things for tonight, and there are so many papers up here. Let me try. I'll do it the best I can. Okay. I have a brother and a sister and a son who have Fragile X syndrome. Fragile X is the most common form of developmental disability, inherited form of developmental disabilities. My brother was born in 1952 at a time when there were actually no services for someone who had a developmental disability. As a result, my parents, Ray and Margaret Bloom, along with families of children, other children who had developmental disabilities, actually worked very hard to start the first school program, the first recreation program, and the first workshop in Champaign County to address their needs. No one wants to go back to those desperate times again, to the days of knowing that our only hope was to live one more day than our disabled child. In 1974, my husband and I had our second child, Ryan. We realized that whatever was affecting our family had to be genetic, although the gene for it was not discovered until 1991. I grew up believing that I could make a difference. I attended the University of Illinois, and I became a special education teacher. I taught for 35 years. I have been a member of the Champaign County Developmental Disabilities Board since its inception in 2004. I speak to you tonight from the perspective of a sibling, a parent, a professional, a board member, and a citizen of the state of Illinois. I need to show you an example of what services for those with a developmental disability can do. I want to introduce you to my son, Ryan. Ryan, can you come up here? This is my handsome son, Ryan. He is 36 years old. He works at Sam's Club in Champaign as a cart attendant. In October, Ryan will work at Sam's for 15 years. He earns $11.45 an hour. In the past, he worked 5 hours a day, 3 days a week. As a result of the recession, his hours have been cut to 5 hours a day, 1 day a week. On the days he doesn't work at Sam's, he works at Clark Road, operated by DSC, and there are many people here who know about Clark Road. He loves his jobs. He is dependable, he works hard, he pays taxes to the state of Illinois. He moved into Lincolnshire Group Home 2 years ago, where he lives with four other housemates. He's living a productive, fulfilling life. He would not have this quality of life, however, were it not for the services that have been provided to him. Public education, and you were even in Mrs. Grabo's class for a short time, weren't you? I thought so. Job placement, job coaching, residential services, and the work of all the dedicated people who provide these services. As a teacher, I believe in visual aids, so I'm going to hold something up here. This is a 55-page report that came from the state comptroller's office. In these 55 pages, on each page are 44 nonprofits who have not received payment from the state of Illinois. That is a terrific amount of money. It's $500 million that have not been paid to service providers in the state of Illinois, and it's unconscionable. I know that if these bills are not paid, services are going to cease and desist, and I don't want to go back to the day when we didn't have them. You, as representatives and senators, will tell us tonight what you will do to represent Ryan his co-workers, his housemates, and his friends. We will listen intently to your answers to the questions asked. I speak only for myself when I say I will campaign and vote for whomever will step up now and in the House and the Senate and say loudly and clearly that this is morally wrong and socially unjust to withhold funding for services for those most vulnerable in our state, among whom are those with developmental disabilities. Now that you've heard a couple of real-life experiences on impact that your decisions have or will have, should you be elected, we will begin. My intent this evening is to ask you to specifically address each question. With only 2 minutes to respond, it is very important that you answer the question, as it is these specific answers that our audience wants to hear. After each question is read, I will call on each of you for your response. We have a timekeeper this evening who will hold up cards when 1 minute is remaining and then again when 15 seconds is remaining. When her hand goes up in the air, I will know that your 2 minutes are up and we will move to the next panel member. Let's begin with our first question. Are you ready? Here we go. Question number one. You are in a position tonight to secure votes in November. With this in mind, would you please provide at least one example of how you have advocated for individuals with disabilities, parents, and providers, so we can decide where to cast our votes? Senator Ryder, we'd like to start with you.
Is it on? Can you hear me?
It's on.
All right, thank you. First of all, thank you and to the organizers for putting this together, and I do apologize for being late. We all become more reliant on technology as time goes on, and my GPS put me in the middle of a cornfield at about 10 minutes until 7. I have served as an Illinois State Senator for the last 8 years, and during that time, I've developed relationships with people like Dale Morrissey and Lila McGuire and other individuals throughout my district, advocating for them on issues of payment, on issue of regulatory issues, and a whole host of other issues. This is a problem, the problem that you face today, the problems that many other providers across the state face, is found in the lack of setting priorities. That's what it is. I mean, if you have enough money to pay for 7 things, and you choose instead to try to pay for 8 or 9 or 10, what's going to happen? Someone's not going to get their money, or they're not going to get that money on time. In the last 8 years, since I've been a state senator, human service providers who serve those with developmental disabilities and mental illness have seen their share of general revenue fund monies drop from 4.9% of all the money that state government in fiscal year 2003 to 3.3% this year. Okay, now over that time, state government is spending about $8 billion more. Your share of that is dropping by almost 40%. That's the problem. So when I say setting priorities, that's the issue. That number needs to be turned around. Now everyone would agree that numbers needs to be turned around. Question is how? You're going to have to stop doing some of the other things that state government's trying to do. I'm about running out of time, but I will be happy to follow up on that and give some specific suggestions later. Thank you.
All right. Mr. Weger.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I want to say thank you to everyone here having me tonight. I'm glad to be here. And I want to just say I'm not an expert on disability issues, but I do have some experiences, and I have some things that I've done that I'm proud of, and I'd like to talk to you about those. I'm an employee of the Illinois Department of Commerce. I'm regional director for Southeastern Illinois for the Commerce Department, and I spent a couple of years as the head of policy and research at the Commerce Department. And one of the things that we did that I'm awfully proud of was we got involved in a program called the Disability Works Program. And it was successfully piloted in the city of Chicago to begin with, and it was an unprecedented effort to help provide comprehensive services to disabled persons to help them find employment. And it was very successful in Chicago. And so when my agency, DCEO, got involved and started providing funding to it, we did that so that we could expand the program throughout the state of Illinois. And it's been very successful. The numbers show that we've had a really good impact. And so, again, as I say, my primary area of expertise and education and experience is in the area of economic development policy. But I am glad to be able to come here and learn tonight and be able to express my opinions on the issues that are important to all of you. And I did want to just highlight that one thing, which you asked for, something that I've been involved in to help persons with disabilities, and that's the Disability Works Program. And I'm awfully proud to have been a part of getting that off the ground here in Illinois.
Thank you. I especially appreciate you specifically answering that. Thank you. Senator Michael Frerichs.
I want to thank everyone for coming out here this evening, showing your support for these issues, for inviting us to give us an opportunity to speak today. So the question posed to us is, what have we done to specifically help developmental disabilities community? And that's for at least one thing. If I've got time and I say this quickly, I'd like to rattle off several things. I think my interest and involvement really began, it's been probably now 6 or 7 years ago that Steve Beckett put me in touch with Dale Morrissey, and we talked about the need for a developmental disabilities board here in Champaign County. And although there were very good people, many of them in this room tonight, who were very involved in that campaign, I started working with them, helping out with the campaign in ways that I could, and I think hopefully they were appreciative of those efforts. That was very good here in Champaign County. But since then, I've served in the Illinois Senate, being elected in 2006. In that time, some of those friendships that I made during that campaign, I've continued to work with. So when Dale Morrissey brought the example to me of how the Illinois could leverage, how the state of Illinois could leverage more federal dollars, I worked with the governor's office to change their policy that allowed a lot more money to flow into local providers here. When we were working on a capital bill last year, I worked with Representative Jacobson. We realized the need for community-based housing, more individualized attention for people with developmental disabilities was important. We got money in that capital bill to build some facilities, and hopefully within the next year or two, that money will be released and will go to helping people with developmental disabilities. And I've worked with a number of great providers in this area, whether it be Dale Morrissey or Tom Pollock or at Crosspoint or Mark Klaus, who unfortunately is leaving our area, in terms of helping to move them through the line, helping get them in front of the line and releasing payments. It is a very difficult time right now when the state is very much broke. There's not enough money in the checking account to pay all our bills, but I've tried very hard to help my providers in my area. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Al Reynolds.
Well, I want to thank you also for inviting us all to come and share with our candid opinion of what we need to do for the disabled in the state of Illinois. Personally, I'm involved because I have a daughter also who is disabled, so it's a great concern for me. I'll tell you what I feel. The state of Illinois has over-regulated and have got their priorities upside down when it comes to the disabled. They have other programs and other policies that they do that they pay more frequently and sooner than they do for the people that really care. And I think that's what has to be turned upside down and get people on the right track and get the priorities right about what really needs to be paid here. And the fact that someone has to wait a year to get a van when the bureaucracy and the regulatory system in this state keeps them from getting the necessary equipment they need to take care of their children. It is absurd. So that's what my plan is to go to Springfield and say, let's get the right track here and let's turn this thing upside down and get the people who really care at the top of the list and stop this regulatory bull.
Thank you. Representative Naomi Jacobson.
Thank you very much for holding this forum tonight and inviting us to be here. And thank you all for coming out. In being asked what one thing I've done for people with disabilities or for services for disabilities. I don't know where to start. On the local level, I have worked very closely, I believe, with PACE, and have attended many of their events and been in their office, talk with their consumers to help them get the kinds of services that they need. My first session, when I was first elected, the first session, I served on developmental disabilities and mental illness in the House as one of the committees. And in serving that on that committee, I certainly learned a lot. And, you know, we think that we're going to offer something when we serve on a committee, but we learn a lot, too. From there, I learned also how to work with people here in the community, maybe some of the people I hadn't thought about trying to reach out to and work with. And last year, I worked very closely, I think it was last year, with Dale Morrissey and other representatives, and this was a bipartisan effort to make sure, and I believe Senator Frerichs already referred to this, to make sure that some of the money that could have been leveraged, could have come to the developmental disabilities, just needed some paperwork to change so that they could leverage more of that money. And that worked. We were able to work together. I plan to continue to work to make sure that we do have funding for developmental disabilities. It's wrong to say that we should cut services, that we should cut the budget, because there isn't anything to cut. I want to continue to work and make sure that we do have the necessary resources.
Thank you. Mr. Norman Davis.
Well, like everyone else, I want to thank you for holding this, although it is a little bit difficult for me because, to be honest with you, I've never been all that involved with developmental disabilities. I'm willing to learn what is needed to be done. However, as I sit here and listen, I'm thinking back on times when I have been able to help out. And I remember that as a child, my mother would babysit for children with cerebral palsy. This is back in the days well before we had group homes and things like that. But she would help with discounted babysitting rates so that mothers could go out and work and we would take their children in. In high school, I helped with cystic fibrosis children with their exercises. I'd go into their homes and we'd work with them with their exercises to keep them their muscles moving and so forth. I feel very, very blessed in that my children have no disabilities. My grandchildren have no disabilities beyond a little bit of ADHD. But I am willing to sit here and learn what needs to be done. I know that the state has its priorities screwed up when the governor can give his employees, 235 of them, 5% to 20% raises, and then stop payments and drop human services payments by $100 million. We have got a problem. The governor doesn't get it, and I don't think our present legislature really gets it. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Chad Hayes.
Thank you so very much for the invitation to be here. I work in human services. When elected, I will be the only healthcare executive in the Illinois House of Representatives. I'm a vice president at Provena United Samaritans Medical Center in Danville, Illinois. I'm acutely aware on a day-to-day basis of the horror of not having enough funding to take care of those who are disproportionately underserved. Our community will see 40,000 people through our emergency room this year alone in a community of 34,000. That is unheard of. It speaks to the dynamics of our community, specifically as it relates to the developmentally disabled. I have had the privilege of working for a not-for-profit organization whose mission is to build communities of healing and hope in the spirit of Jesus Christ. I have personally written many, many grants to try to bring dollars back to East Central Illinois, to leverage state and federal dollars to be of direct assistance, to partner with community stakeholders. Some are here tonight. We've written grants with Bruce Swardini of the Prairie Center. We've worked closely with Tom Pollock at Crosspoint to make sure we are able to access services in a seamless fashion. It is morally reprehensible and fundamentally wrong that at a time in which our state is in financial crisis, we are leaving out those who are voiceless first. That cannot stand.
Thank you. Mr. Michael Poore.
I, too, would like to thank you for the opportunity to speak. I, like many of you, was blessed by God with a daughter that had cerebral palsy. God only gives those that can handle it to special children. I know what your pain is like by not having the resources. And if it hadn't been for the state and the resources they provided, I couldn't have made it. My daughter passed away 5 years ago at the age of 15. That's one of the other things that happens to those of us that do have a handicapped child. What I've done personally in my life, I have personally raised through the Turtle Club, which is a not-for-profit group, over $500,000 that we give to groups that benefit the handicapped of our society. Through the Knights of Columbus, I have raised money through the Tootsie Roll Drive and given that to organizations and to groups that benefit the needy and the handicapped of our society. I've worked and served on the board of the East Central Illinois Special Olympics. I've coached Special Olympics, and I continue to do what I can to advocate for the rights of those less privileged than us. Again, the state has failed to meet its obligations. When elected, I will ensure and promise each of you the funding will be there. It's an atrocity that we have not raised the revenues that we all need needs to be done in order to provide the services that are needed. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to, did I miss someone?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Mr. Vince Lemay.
That's okay. Is this working?
Yes.
Yeah, the little light's on. It is really encouraging to see so many people show up for this. I wish I had a long list like some of these ladies and gentlemen. But I do not. I have not been a strong advocate for people with disabilities. But what I see here is I see people with real human issues and people that are the having to deal with being vulnerable in our society. And our society, by letting our political problems get in the way, are losing necessary services. We're looking for, and obviously you have politicians up here, we're looking for political answers to these dilemmas. I'm a member of the Green Party. I could talk to you about the Green Party for a long time, but I only have a minute. So I had to make a choice when I jumped into the political arena. Who would I side with? And I found that I couldn't side with the Democrats or the Republicans. They've got us where we are. And I really hate to make this political, but this is a political issue. If you research what the Greens have stood for since they've started, you will see that the Greens are advocates for the most vulnerable in our society. And we look out for those that are not part of the elite. And I would appreciate if you would look at where the rest of the panel's coming from and see what party they're affiliated with and who got us into this dilemma and who's promising to cut taxes to help this out. And again, I hate to make this political, but it's a very political issue. Thank you.
Thank you. We're going to move on to question two. What specific steps would you take to move the system away from expensive and restrictive institutions toward community and home-based services? And Senator Frerichs, I'd like to start with you.
Well, fortunately, I don't have to invent something new. There are already systems out there. The ARC of Illinois has been very clear about this. They've done rides around the state. I've worked with them. They have a blueprint for how we should move forward. What we need to do is implement that blueprint. So it's something that I have been pledged support to. We'll continue, if reelected, to continue to support. And I think we're making real movement in the state away from institutionalization of people and to focus more on community needs. It's something I pledge to do and will continue to work on.
Good. Thank you. Mr. Reynolds.
Thanks. What I would like to see is more home care, more help for people and parents to take care of their kids at home. I think in my own particular case, my daughter did so much better when she was home and had help at home. And if when she was eligible to go to school, we had special ed teachers. And I think we need to increase that aspect of our education, that we get more people encouraged to do special ed as teachers. And then I also know that they've had a great deal of success with what they call group homes, where instead of putting people into an institution, they put them into group homes, and there's a camaraderie, there's a familiarity and a comfort zone for individuals, and I think that's a real advantage. So those are the avenues that I would like to see expanded with the care for disabled.
Thank you. Senator Ryder.
Thank you. I want to follow up a little bit on what Senator Frerichs had to say. The process of taking individuals who are in these large, what they call in Springfield lingo, state ops, these large institutions, evaluating those individuals and then getting them into a community setting is going on, but it has been an arduous, enormously difficult task for a couple different reasons. One, the governor's offices in the last several years really haven't put their weight behind the provider's efforts. And anyone who knows this knows that. They've not put their efforts behind the provider's efforts to get into the state-operated facilities and find out who really belongs in a community setting. And that's because there is tremendous opposition to winnowing down the number of people in those state-operated facilities by the union that represents the employees there. And again, anyone who understands this system knows that's true. That is a travesty. As we were introduced here just a moment ago to, these individuals put in a community setting, to live in a community setting and to work in a community setting, that's the only way they're going to have the opportunity to fully exploit whatever abilities they have. And isn't that what you want for your children, regardless of what that ability or talent potential may be, is to put them in a setting where they can fully exploit that? That's not going on right now, and we need the office of the governor behind that effort 100%.
Mr. Wagger.
Yeah, thank you. As far as what we can do to improve the system and the services that we have here in Illinois, from the reading I've been doing the last few days on this issue, and then talking with some of you tonight, I think there, as Senator Frerichs said, we have a blueprint to improve the system here in Illinois. I've reviewed that. I think it's sound. I think it's solid. I think we need to move forward on that. Obviously, there seems to be consensus on moving away from the institutionalization and more toward the smaller, more localized, flexible support services. I think we need to do that. My aunt taught special education for 25 years, and so, I've had some exposure to some of these issues, not as much as I'd like, and again, I want to continue to learn more as we move forward. But, I think it seems to me, obviously, we've got to pay our bills on time. We've got to pay our providers in a timely manner so that they can focus on delivering services to our loved ones. And so we've got to get on track. We've got to make that a priority. And we need to cut back on the wait list and the backlog. I've seen some numbers about how long the line is in Illinois for people who are waiting for services. disabled people or with developmental disabilities. It's unacceptable. I mean, we've got to cut back on that backlog. And, you know, at the core of who I am is, you know, the belief that we've got to be our brother's keeper. You know, we've got to stand up for those who are less fortunate than we are, and stand up for those who are the most vulnerable in our society. And that's something, you know, that's a promise that we take to heart, and we should take to heart. And I intend to take it to heart if I'm a member of the state Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lemie.
We've got, well, on each item, we've got a blueprint that's ready to go. And we have a governor standing in the way. And it brings it back to where we were again. If we've got this stuff and we know what's best, what is it that stops us from doing it? And it comes back to, well, what's the question? I mean, we can blame the governor, or we can blame whoever got us into this financial mess. But in the end, the people that got us there have the solution, but they're not willing to use it. And what you've done here tonight is what you need to do in order to get started. If that pressure gets put on the governor, as the gentleman at the end was talking about, maybe we can get something done. But you've got to stand up like you are tonight, even though you're sitting down. You have to stand up and make your voice heard and get us together like you have and make us tell you what we've been through and what we've done and what we want to do. I have to admit, I don't have much experience in this again. Currently, I just drive a truck. I haven't been in politics. I was a high school math teacher for a while. I've dealt with some of the special ed kids, but I can't say that makes me an expert at all in any of this. But I do know that the solutions are there and somebody's stopping it. And if the people that are there are stopping it, we need to put somebody else in there. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Norman Davis.
What we need here is, as this gentleman just mentioned, we need to have more forums like this where you can start putting pressure on your elected officials to get these blueprints in place, get them used, to get the governor to listen. But beyond that, we also need to educate the general public as to the need and the solutions that really work. I have been in communities where the idea of a group home is vilified, that these people will be a problem in the general society, and that is not the truth of the matter. We know through experience now that it works for them. It works for the community in general, and is one of those things that helps cut the costs, which is one of the things that we really need to advocate for now, is cutting costs of care. We have to be more efficient. We have to be more mindful of where the money is going. We also need to put the pressure on those people who have the ability to let loose the funds and get it where it does the most good. So if we can advocate, like in forums like this, if we can educate the general public that these things are not evil, that we are not going to have more problems than we know what to do with, I think we'll be on the right path to getting the problems taken care of. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jacobson.
Thank you. I believe the question was specific steps to move away from expensive
and restrictive environments. Yeah.
Right. All right. Well, I think we did take one step in recent history in Illinois, and that's when we closed Howell. That was a large facility. It needed to be closed, and I worked with my colleagues for some time to help move along so that could happen. Now, those people are in the community, and one of the things that we're making sure of, and I will continue to make sure, is that the people who are in Howe are still getting the services they need, are still having, we need to make sure that the money that was there follows the money as they have been moved, follows the people as they've been moved into the communities. That is one thing we need to continue to work towards and always make sure. And we should look at other large facilities and make sure if they are not serving our people right, that we close those. But it's also important to make sure that people don't need to go to institutions or to go to large facilities. We want to make sure that, and I will continue to do this through Human Services, which I chair, the House Committee, to make sure that personal assistants are available so that people can stay in their homes. They have the dignity of living in their own homes, in their own communities. When we threaten to cut off funding for personal assistance, that does not make it easy for people who use them. And I know that I'm going to be, I continue to be an advocate for that. We need to provide services when they're needed. Let's not wait till somebody is in a mental illness crisis before they can get in to see a doctor. We need to make sure that people get the services when they need them to prevent the crises.
Thank you. Mr. Poor.
Thank you. There again, there is a blueprint in place. Again, meeting your obligations, funding what's there. One thing, I do serve on the Danville City Council, and one thing we have done, we have advocated and supported rezoning and special use permits for group homes. A lot that are put on or funded through Prairie Center, or not Prairie Center, but Cross Points through, we have the Schultz House, we have the community living options homes that we all operated there. Again, those are funded a lot by private individuals, a lot through IDA, a lot through HUD. That's other ways that you know, we can help meet some of the crisis in the state is using some of the vouchers and things available through the Illinois Housing Development Authority or through the federal government. None of us ever want to see our children. I know I used to pray to God that my daughter would die before I did, because I did not want her to be institutionalized. I didn't want anybody other than myself or somebody loving to care for her. I didn't want her stuck in a hole. And closing the state institution is probably one of the best things that we ever did to bring our loved ones, bring our children back into the fold of society. You know, we have to take care of those that cannot take care of themselves, and I think that's a responsibility of not only government, but each and every one of us. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hayes.
I think it's well documented as it relates to human services that moving away from the large institutional setting is not only a much more compassionate way to work with those who are in need, but it's also good business. We know across the spectrum that it is much less expensive to perform surgery at an ambulatory surgery center. We know without question that we live in a society that currently in larger cities and very soon even in rural areas where well babies will be able to be born in ambulatory centers where we don't even need to be in the hospital at all. We have very exciting examples at the Danville VA Medical Center where we are moving our veterans who have pronounced mental issues out of the institutional setting and into group settings where they can maximize their own talents. One of the things as I travel around my district in this campaign that is a common thread is how fed up our citizenry is at the partisan bickering. This notion that an idea is not tenable or is not a good idea because someone from across the aisle brought it to bear has to stop. We are in a de facto way punishing those who are most in need because we are polarized and can get absolutely nothing done. You know, human service is not a Republican issue. It's not a Democratic issue. It's not a Green Party issue. It truly is an issue of a compassionate society, and we cannot hold those most in need hostage while we argue over things that are truly unimportant.
Thank you. The final question presented to our panel will offer you each one last opportunity to respond. You must be aware that some providers serving people with disabilities are closing, or at a minimum, services are being reduced and eliminated. These are vital services for basic needs, the essence of what we all take for granted. Other providers may be months, weeks, or even days away from the same fate, mostly as a result of significant payment delays. Simply put, the state is not paying. With this in mind, please tell us why we can and should count on you to ensure that funding will not be cut further for people with disabilities. Mr. Davis, I'd like to start with you, please.
We start off with the idea that the state is not paying its bills. This is the issue that really upset me and got me into the race to begin with. And it was this issue when I stopped hollering and screaming and saying, what is the governor thinking when he's trotting the kids out in front of us and saying that if you don't give me my tax increase, these kids are not going to get services? What is he doing other than grandstanding and showing that he has so little compassion? What we need to do is, number one, get the state under control. We have to stop the unnecessary spending. We have to stop duplicating our services, and we need to stop the duplication of services, of commissions and things. We have to bring the people who are not actually doing the work out of the jobs that they have been appointed. We have to do a forensic audit in order to find out where all the money is going. Then we reprioritize our spending so that those people who are most need of the money, that they get that money in a timely manner. Without finding out where the money is going and how to control it, we're just going to continue doing the same thing that we've been doing time after time after time. We cannot continue this and expect people who need the services, need the money to be able to continue. We have to be able to get this under control so that you can be paid in a timely manner. My wife works for Prevena. She knows that they are 9 months to a year behind in payments for drugs that they use in their offices. This cannot continue. We have to get it under control so that we can pay on time.
Thank you. Representative Jacobson.
Thank you. I'm very much aware that some providers are closing or reducing services due to payment delays. I have worked with many of the providers here trying to help them get payments. Have we always been successful? No. Why? There is no money. It's not that somebody is sitting on the money, holding it, and not willing to write the checks. There is no money. We in the legislature have taken furlough days. We were the first to do it. We wanted to say if people were going to have to do it, we would do it. That doesn't solve your problem, I know it. But we need to make sure that as we are looking at these services that are being cut, at doors that are being threatened to be closed, that we take steps to find where we can cut. And I'm telling you, that's a challenge, because if you look at what's been cut already, there is not much left to cut. We've cut education, we've cut human services, we've cut medical providers. We have cut and cut and cut. And when I hear other people say that, oh yeah, we're just gonna cut and not raise taxes, that's not gonna solve it. We need to address additional revenue. We need to step to the plate. I did that before when it came to the House. I was willing to put my name on the line. It's public record because I voted for an increase in taxes. Is that popular with everybody? No. But you know that we need revenue. Yes, I'm willing to look at cuts. I worked with my colleagues to see how we could do that. We couldn't get any votes in the committees that where people were crying to make cuts. because they said, well, make cuts and then we'll vote for a tax increase. They wouldn't make the cuts. So I'm still willing to put my foot on the line, to put my name on the line and say, I want to go back to Springfield and help increase revenue so we can have services for the people in Illinois.
Thank you. Mr. Hayes.
Services are, in fact, closing every day. Providers are not being paid, and when they are being paid, the rate is untenable. At our own hospital, the rate that we are paid to see a Medicaid patient is below our cost of delivering the service. It's even more pronounced for an individual provider or a small community-based provider. I've never met a physician or a provider in my life, and I deal with many on a day-to-day basis, who refuse to see a patient because of lack of compassion. The issue is, unfortunately, a business issue. They cannot pay their power bill. They cannot pay their own staff because the state is so tardy in payment. What a dynamic. We are paying and reimbursing our providers at a reprehensible rate to begin with, and then the bonus package, it is extraordinarily late all of the time. I've talked to providers recently, Frank Bernacci at WorkSource specifically, who has recently been asked to sign contracts for service with the state, and the state is offering no evidence at all at what the reimbursement will even be. Just provide the services, we may not reimburse you at all. What kind of an absurd and ludicrous dynamic is that for a provider? Senator Ryder said it well in his opening statement. Governance is, in fact, a matter of prioritization. Everything is not a priority. I have the privilege now of speaking almost on a daily basis to groups, each group wondering where the money is going to come from. And I am honest. Each group is not going to get the money. The well is, in fact, dry. The need for bellying up to the bar and prioritizing is now, and the prioritization is your priority, and it's education, and it's making us a business-friendly state, because in the long run, we have to have private sector growth to possibly sustain the services we all agree are deserved.
Thank you. Mr. Poore.
Thank you. A couple of facts. Every one of us up here, when elected, all we have control over or could do anything with is about 40% of the budget. The $54 billion budget, we can touch a little over $25 billion. Without new revenue, folks, another 26% will have to be cut out of the services that you need. 90% of the general fund budget goes to police and fire, health, human services, and public safety, education. That's it. I have went on record that I support House Bill 174 that would raise sales tax on services, that would raise 2% on the income tax. I've also said I would be in favor of a progressive income tax. That's on record. I've published it. It's in my papers, so, you know, we need the revenue, folks. The Institute of Government and Public Affairs has already said, just to maintain the $12.5 billion deficit, another $4.3 billion needs to be raised in new revenue for fiscal year 2012, just to maintain that deficit. So, folks, we all need to buckle up. We all need to understand, without new revenue, the only thing we can do is continue to cut. I, for one, want to see the services, the programs that help those in need, restored and fully funded. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lemay.
Let me set up a little situation. A friend of yours comes to you and says that they're running short this month because of some certain bill came up they weren't expecting, and can they borrow some money? And so you do. And the next time you see them, they have a new car. Okay. How can we trust the state with more revenue? I agree completely that we need it. And in fact, if you go to the Green Party website, especially Rich Whitney's site, he has specified taxes to set up to help with our deficit. We've got to get our politicians in a situation that we can trust them. How can we trust them to raise these taxes in the state of Illinois? Have they not raised taxes in the past? We need to eliminate as best as we can the illegal and legal corruption that's going on, that's wasting the money that should be going into services that we need. Nothing else can be fixed. We have to straighten out our election, the way we redistrict. We have to do things like when somebody's on a railroad committee, they shouldn't be allowed to accept money from a railroad company. Those kind of simple things are going on. You need to follow the money. And that's what's going on here. If we can't trust them with all the money they've gotten so far, how are we going to trust them when they start raising more taxes? Corruption is what's causing the problems here. And until we address it, I have a hard time wanting to give them more money to throw away. Thank you.
Mr. Wagger.
Thank you. Folks, the overall theme of my campaign is solutions and results, not partisan politics. And if you jump on my website, www.joshwagger.org, you're going to find that very theme, solutions and results, not partisan politics. And that's the overall reason. That's the reason I decided to get into this race, because I perceived a problem in Springfield where we have very serious problems in Illinois. We know about the economic problems, the budget problems, and we have this situation where we have too many long-term entrenched incumbents in office in both parties, frankly, who are more interested in practicing this kind of excessive damaging partisanship, more interested in doing that than they are rolling up their sleeves and doing what they were sent to Springfield to do, and that's to work together, compromise, find solutions, solve problems, and get the people's work done. And that's the whole purpose of my candidacy and my campaign. We're going to check the party labels at the door, and we're going to get the job done. We have got to restore adequate funding for services for those with developmental disabilities and disabilities in general in Illinois. I'm hearing that. I get that. I see that. We've got to get it done. Now, there are those who will tell you that we can solve the budget problem in Illinois with cuts alone. Well, you know, we have a $13 billion budget deficit. We would have to cut the state budget in half to balance it. You know, we cannot do that. We can't go there. Former Governor Jim Edgar says that if we cut the state budget by 10%, that would be a really bad idea that would cause permanent, irreversible, devastating damage to the education system, to the service disability service provider system in Illinois. So we can't do that. We've got to find a combination. We've got to be open-minded to new revenue. We've got to be open-minded to cuts, to programs and initiatives that aren't effective. We've got to put it all together. But most importantly, we've got to get the people's business done, and we've got to work together, both parties, to solve the problem in Illinois. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Ryder.
Thank you. I'm interested in bipartisanship, but I'm more interested in good policy. My constituent sent me to Springfield in the Senate 8 years ago, not to get along with anyone, but to stand up for what they wanted. And what they have seen, I would suggest to you, in the last several years, including the people in this room who are receiving less and less and less and less share of state taxpayer dollars, is not what they've wanted to see. Here is, if the specific question was about getting bills paid, okay, there's one way to get those bills paid sooner right now. and that is for either the governor himself, through his executive authority, to withhold dollars from areas of the budget that he thinks we shouldn't be spending money in, or to bring the General Assembly back and allow us to do the job that, quite frankly, should have been done last May, rather than passing a budget in lump sums and saying, Governor, you make the choice. You do it. And then complain when he cuts money somewhere because you didn't want to make the hard decisions. That's wrong, and that's what happened in this budget year. So we should, I would happily go back and let's start a line-by-line, program-by-program process. Find out what programs are duplicitous. Find out what spending is wasteful and start there. Because the notion that you can take the last 8 years of spending and pile an $8 billion tax increase on this and make it all better, does anyone really believe that? That that's the answer to sign off on the last 8 years and say, just if the taxpayers cough up more money, everything will be fine? That is a road to bringing us right back here to have the same conversation in about 3 or 4 years, and I don't want that. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Reynolds. Mr. Reynolds.
Sorry, I didn't hear you. Let me make this clear. We're not in this situation that we're in right now in the state because we didn't have enough taxes on us. We're in this situation because our Springfield legislature and assembly spent too much money, period. What we need to do is stop that excess spending, get a balanced budget like the Constitution says. Don't come here to the people and say, I have $26 billion in revenue, but I want to spend $32. It doesn't work in my house, and it doesn't work in yours. The biggest thing that they do is they tell you that if you don't get this tax increase, we're going to have to cut fire department and police department and all of the really necessary agencies. That's baloney. We don't have to cut those. There are a lot of other ways they can cut money and not raise taxes. Like somebody said, if we did a line-by-line audit, a project-by-project audit, and then also a bureaucrat-by-bureaucrat, so we know who is proposing all that fluff, puff, pork. Make them accountable for all the things that they bring to us that are not essential. In an economy like we're in right now, we do not need to be spending money on unnecessary projects. This is a critical time for the state of Illinois. This is a critical time for the entire nation. And for us to be spending money on frivolous things like heating the governor's driveway and other such frivolous kind of projects is ridiculous. It's time that we hold them accountable. Enough is enough. Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Frerichs.
Thank you very much. I know we said we weren't going to ask any questions about taxes here, but we've broached that subject and people are talking. And let me just tell you, if anyone comes to you here today, you need to question anyone who says, I'm going to get more money for you, but we're going to solve our budget problems with cuts. They're incompatible. Yes, I think everyone agrees. Everyone who's talked about new revenue agrees there are places we can cut in state government. And we do need to go through the budget line by line and cut things out. But we're looking at a $13 billion deficit. Everyone pretty much agrees with that. $13 billion. We spend $26 billion on our general revenue fund. Are you telling me that we're spending $13 billion on heating the governor's driveway? We're not. That was spent years ago. That's not in this budget this year. The state of Illinois has cut back. If anyone tells you we're going to cut our way out of this, they are telling you they will cut your services. The only way we get out of this is through a series of cuts to cut out some waste and abuse, and we can cut out a few billion dollars. You're not going to cut $13 billion out of the budget, because that budget includes $9 billion for education. And people who talk about cuts don't mention cuts to education. It includes about $11 billion for health and human services. And people are telling you here, we need to prioritize health and human services. It includes $2 billion for public safety, our prisons, our state police. No one's telling you those cuts. If someone tells you we're going to cut our way out of it, ask them, what are those cuts? Show me the 13 or show me at least $7 billion in cuts you're going to make that show money for developmental disabilities is safe. I just ask you to look. It is going to take money to balance this budget. It's going to take a combination. It's going to take political courage, because both of those are unpopular things. And I encourage you to look very closely this fall.
Thank you very much. Before we begin with audience participation, we would like to thank each of you for your time and willingness to come and answer our questions. We don't need to tell you that times are difficult in the state of Illinois, but we expect that you will remember the stories you heard this evening and remember Ryan's face, Cole's wheelchair, as an example of how your decisions affect our lives. While you are working at the state level, we are fighting for every service and every need for our children, and we expect your help. Thank you all. Audience, thank you for being here. Audience, thank you for being here as well. The better informed we become as citizens and voters, the better decisions we can make in the voters' booth to elect the legislators that are truly willing to stand up and fight for the needs of our family members, not only in forums like this evening, but more importantly on the floor of the House and the Senate. Thank you for being here. Before we adjourn for our open question and answer segment, I would like to thank you, our audience, and members of the media for coming to the Disability Legislative Forum this evening. We hope it provided you with information that can be helpful in November. Thank you. We are now adjourned, and those of you in the audience who would like to speak with the representatives and the candidates, senators, they will be here. You can talk with them individually if you like. We are not going to do it as an open forum. Thank you so much for coming.